A lot of people think that Magic Camp is just for kids, and that's why so many other people in my class were kids. Self-fulfilling prophecy. It's really for anybody with a dream and a belief in magic and a little extra time after school.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
But anyway, this is a Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is not Dennis Freib.
And I'm not Nick Paul.
There we go. See, I thought of that earlier. I'm like, I hope I'm going to set that up for him, and I hope it works.
Yeah, it worked out.
We're so in sync, we finish each other's...
sandwiches.
Sandwiches, exactly. How are you, Dennis? Before I ask how you are, I wanted to plug myself because I don't get to do that. I'm not...
That sounds disgusting.
I get... You know, what I do in my personal time is none of your gosh darn business.
Plug yourself. Go ahead. Plug yourself all you want, Nick.
I just bought a new plunger. It works out great. For the toilet. For the toilet. I'll be at the Comedy and Magic Club March 28th through April 2nd, and I will be at the Magic Castle April 11th through 17th. So if you live in Los Angeles and you want to see me do fake magic tricks, come on out. Check it out. That's exciting for me because I never get to plug or I get to tell people about things I'm doing that are public. I do so many I think both of us, we do so many private events that it's exciting when, you know, someone can buy a ticket and come see what we do.
No.
So that'll be fun. How are you, Dennis? Dennis Freib?
Good, good. Everything's good. Just had a little nap, early morning show. Only got like 3 hours of sleep because I couldn't fall asleep.
I don't think I cut in before you were talking about, but you had a 6 a.m. call, 7 a.m. call for some strolling?
Yeah, 6 a.m. for a gig. It was like call time was 6 to 10:30 or something like that.
I've done a few of those, and those are, you know, nobody's awake. Nobody wants to see magic tricks at that time of the day. There are certain people that are morning people, but I don't even want to get out of bed unless I have to. And I can't imagine someone wants to see a magic trick while having their coffee.
Yeah, one of the only times that it was semi-successful for me was when they had a 24-hour event over at Disney where, like, they were going to keep the park open for 24 hours. And so it was just, like, a bunch of people just waiting out in front of Magic Kingdom. And so I was, like, strolling through there, like, through just, like, shoulder to shoulder doing magic tricks and doing this kind of stuff. And then the park opened, and they wanted me to go into the park and then stroll through the park, specific areas that they had designated for me, and do that. And that was crazy.
Yeah, that's a little bit different because people are, you know, are pumping up and are expecting. It's like doing like an all night party or something for like a high school or something like that. It's where people are expecting to be awake that entire time. And
yeah, this one was unique because there's a live radio show happening. So I had time to go in and entertain people in between the breaks of the live radio show. That was quite a challenge.
Mm-hmm. I had a weird thing happen. I had a client that I worked with. In Disney, I did a cool event where she brought in like two stars of Harry Potter. So I did like a show, and then these stars came out and, you know, talked to the audience. They were actors in the movies. And then she was bringing me again for another event. And then I found out from somebody I met at the Orlando event, a friend of mine from London. She's like, oh, yeah, so and so passed away last week. Did you hear? And I'm in a very unique position right now. I don't know what to do. I haven't been contacted by the company. I don't know if it's still happening. I've reached out, I've emailed, I've heard nothing. So I have to give them a call today, and it's just kind of one of those weird things of, oh, I'm so sorry. By the way, do you still want me to do magic tricks? And I don't know how to approach it because, I mean, I'm totally cool with them canceling, but I don't...
Do you have a contract with them?
I have a contract. It was never signed because it was sent out. And then she went into the hospital, but I was told everything, like they received the deposit from their client, you know, it's kind of like a agency type thing. And it's just so weird. I've never had this happen before and I don't know what to do.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a tough situation.
Yeah. So that's what I'm dealing with it right now. And then I just did a casino in Escanaba, Michigan. I did a quick jaunt over to the Upper Peninsula, and man, talk about small towns in literally middle of nowhere. Like the taxi cab driver was taking me back to the airport at 4 a.m. My flight was at 5:30 a.m. on Sunday, and I'm just sitting in the back of this cab going, oh, this man could murder me and no one would know. Maybe they'd figure it out like a week or two later, but he'd have some time to flee the country.
There hasn't been a podcast in a while. What's going on?
Really slacking. But always, it was fine. It was a good corporate event. People were really nice, and it went great. But it's just those thoughts cross your mind when you're just driving through an endless highway in the middle of the Upper Peninsula, and he's like, "Yeah, this is deer country. You know, we could hit some deer on the way out." I'm like, "Please don't. I really want to make my flight so I can get back home."
Oh man, yeah. So Mark Toland was in Orlando.
Oh yeah, I saw that on the Instagram. So you get the Mark Toland is the form. He started this podcast with me, and then he bailed. he went on to change the world. No, he had to move away and do other things. But he's a great guy, a great mentalist. If you don't know him, how's he doing?
Oh, he's doing great. Yeah, he came by the boardwalk and had a good time. He posted up a video. I think I put it on the feed.
Yeah, he does something interesting with his. Because he does a lot of corporate work, and he keeps a pretty solid video blog, like to the point where it seems like it's impossible for him to be doing this by himself. But he is, you know, like I get bogged down doing this, and this is once a week. But he, you know, he has a great work ethic, and I think he's mentioned it to me. You know, it's been a great tool to book shows. You know, it just gets your name out there, and the way he's doing it on YouTube and Snapchat. So, if you're interested in anything like that, definitely check it out. He does a great job and edits it all, I think, himself. So he does a great job with it.
Yeah. He's phenomenal. So yeah, he works with a couple different cameras at the same time and kind of very dynamic with the way he uses it. It's very nice.
Mm-hmm. And he travels quite a bit. I can't even imagine doing that when I travel. You know, my whole goal is to get on the plane, get to the gig and get home. And he's doing this in between, so it's quite an accomplishment. It's pretty wild. So yeah, I try to catch him when I can.
You don't even get any off time. It's like you're constantly working at that level. Yeah.
So he does. It's definitely a great thing to check out. But you guys get to connect, hang out a little bit.
Yeah. We had some dinner and everything. Antoine hung out with us as well, and we just kind of had a little three magician sesh going on. It was fun.
Always good. Three Orlando magician session. That's cool. Anything else going on?
No, I'm just working on new material. Just slowly bringing things in and out, you know, working on new ideas, scripting, and all kinds of things. So,
That's cool. That's always good. I'm doing the same thing. I'm writing my friend show for June here, and it's just you have all these ideas that are like, oh, that'll work, and then you start to actually try to script them out and try to write them, and it's funny how quickly a good idea can fall apart. It seems so easy and simple in your head, and then just slowly becomes realistic, and you're like, oh, this might not work and this might not work. So it's just kind of pushing through those little roadblocks.
Right. Yeah, I really I missed the deadline for the Fringe out here. I should probably start looking at that for next year. I say that like every year, and then like I never know when the deadline is.
They do it so early in Orlando. It was like November of 2014 when I submitted for the 2015 festival, and here they do it pretty more reasonably. You have registration opens up like 3 or 4 months before. You know, it just opened in Hollywood,
right?
So that to me makes a lot more sense. And what's nice about the Hollywood one is it's not a lottery. It's literally you find a venue, you book it, you register through Fringe, and you basically do everything. But in Orlando, it's a lottery. Like, I didn't get in the first time, and then 4 months later, they're like, hey, we have a spot open, and you're on the waiting list. Do you want it? And by that time, I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm not doing this. And so you had to quickly get ready, and you weren't prepared. So it's a good festival. They do a great job, but it's a little bit backwards sometimes. And yeah, it sucks for anybody who isn't planning to do it, because you have to prep almost, you know, a year in advance.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you okay? You dying over there?
No, that was not me.
Oh, is that Antoine?
Yeah, we got workspace going on here. A lot of people working all at once right now.
Good. Don't tell him to get off the podcast. He already had an episode. He's not allowed on anymore. But this week, before I forget, please, if you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes or Stitcher, or you can listen to us on your favorite podcast device. If you would want to donate a dollar or two to the podcast, you can do that to our PayPal, twomagicians1mike@gmail.com. And this week's episode is with the great Kayla Drescher. She is out of the Magic Castle and female magician. We've never had a female magician on, and I don't want to preface it that way. The fact that she's a lady has nothing to do with it.
Didn't you?
What's that?
Didn't you have the chick from Phenomenon? What's her name?
Oh, you're right. I forgot about it. We had earlier on in the first like season, we had Angela Funnett. Yeah. So that's true. I take that back. Okay. So that was a good episode.
If she's listening, I'm like, the chick from Phenomenon. I feel really bad about that now.
It's okay. No, that was a good episode. That was like a couple of years ago. I totally forgot about that one. But yeah, go back and listen to that. She talks about her time on TV and also being a doctor at the same time. But
oh, wow.
Kayla talks about, in this episode, just kind of battling. I brought it up and I felt bad bringing it up, but I'm like, we have to talk about the fact that you're a lady in magic, because I'm sure it's something you get all the time. And I tried to look at it from a non-biased or non-stereotypical perspective, and she was really cool about it and gave a lot of great advice. So whether you're a lady, whether you're somebody who's, you know, has a unique disability, something, you're a minority in magic somehow, this is a great episode for that. And even if you're a white guy who is most of magic, take a listen to. It's a good perspective. But anything you wanted to add in there, Dennis?
No, keep on trucking.
I will, in my Prius, which is
in your Prius.
All right, man, good to talk to you. I'll talk to you soon.
All right,
bye.
For the laugh, I mostly just get asked if we're related, mm-hmm. which I sadly have to say no.
No. Sorry, I thought I was recording, but I'm not. But now we are. But
oh, great. Okay,
Fran,
cool.
This is Kayla Drescher. We're talking about her non-relation to Fran Drescher.
Yes.
Which is, I think, ultimately a good thing.
I think it depends. I think it's cool. But I have a much deeper voice than she does. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah. That's yeah. Cool. Could you give us like a 1 minute, 2 minute bio of your magic career, quote unquote?
Sure. So my name's Kayla. I began doing magic when I was 7, and my father and I wandered into a random magic shop, and I just really loved it. I've performed a lot all over the country, performing for I would like to say at this point, basically every type of crowd, from kids' birthday parties to senior centers to colleges to really drunk people. Mm-hmm. I was never going to be a professional magician. I was actually going to work in green energy, and that's what I studied in college. And after graduating college, I got a job that I just immediately on day one realized I didn't want to do that anymore. So this is longer than a 1-2 minute bio. So
this
I'm
is fascinating.
Keep
going. Not many people go from energy to magic.
Yeah, they have nothing. They really don't have much to do with each other unless you delve deep into like philosophy. But they're very different. And so I just kind of graduated, and then I went back to doing magic and realized that I had the skill level of a 16-year-old magician as opposed to a 22-year-old magician. So I had to really work hard. Mm. I worked really, really hard for the course of, well, up until now, continuously working hard and just keep going. And I really like it. It's really awesome. I love performing magic, making people happy, mm-hmm. and we'll just keep on keeping on.
You did something with Copperfield?
Yeah, great question.
How was that?
Fantastic. So there was a contest on the Today Show where David Copperfield brought on 3 contestants out of the course of many submissions to compete live on the Today Show, live on the air, and he chose a winner. Basically, it was a contest of original magic, and you could bring on basically your take on some cool magic, so some older magic. So Jeff Price and Ben Jackson were also competitors, and I ended up winning, which was amazing, and got flown out to Las Vegas to spend some time with David, see the show, get a tour of his museum warehouse. It was really amazing. Mm-hmm. Certainly life-changing, because that trip made me want to move to Vegas just to be immersed in that community and understand magic from a different perspective, other than the East Coast, middle of Connecticut, Boston perspective on magic. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to get more education and get to know people like Jeff McBride and Lance Burton and Chris Kenner, and just kind of be in their presence, I guess, and ideally absorb through osmosis, if you will, just to understand a different type of performance. And that ultimately led me to Los Angeles. And so I'm really thankful for that experience, because not only was it amazing in terms of magic and getting to see crazy artifacts and history and get to know David on a little bit of a non-Copperfield level, which was really cool.
Sure.
We're not best friends.
We can call him right now if you want.
I will. Hi, David.
Do you have his number?
I don't.
I'm just kidding. The 12-year-old in me just peed a little bit. But
that's fine. Okay. Do you need a tissue?
No, it's okay.
Okay. I'm here for you. So yeah, no, it's really, it was great. And I'm really happy for the experience itself and then what it eventually led to.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah.
So I hate this question. You get it all the time. But what's it like being a lady in magic? Is it a constant battle? Is it something you don't think about anymore? Is it?
You really went right to the controversy. That was great.
Which, to preface, like, I was watching, I think it was Seth Meyers and Maya Rudolph and Amy Poehler were on, and they were talking about just questions that get asked all the time in press. And Maya Rudolph goes, you know what? I really want to be asked. I never get asked this. I really want to be asked what it's like to be a lady in comedy. You know, you don't get asked that enough.
Great question.
Ironically enough, you do get asked that, I'm sure, all the time.
All of the time.
But it doesn't seem, I mean, because the president of the Magic Castle, Erica Larson, is a nice lady.
Yeah.
And you don't even, I don't even think about it, but I'm sure outside of LA, it's got to be something of a challenge or something, a stereotype you have to overcome. I mean, just as a magician, you know, as a male magician, you have to overcome the top hat and rabbit stereotype. So,
yeah, absolutely. I think we're always constantly battling stereotypes. You know, if you tell me you're from Florida, I'm going to ask you why you voted for Jeb Bush. You know, like, that's a stereotype, I guess you can say, you know, things like that. I think we're always constantly, not to get political, but we're always constantly battling stereotypes. So I just battle a different stereotype than what you might have to battle, or anybody else. And obviously there are African-American magicians in magic that also have to battle stereotype as well. I think the difference with being a woman, first of all, it has its advantages, and I don't want to always seem negative about it because it's not negative. Living in Vegas really taught me that I can use my gender to my advantage, but not as a crutch. And that's what I've always tried to do once entering the professional field of magic, is that I can show how different I am by saying, oh, well, you could hire any of these five guys that you've been speaking with, but I'm very different. I can bring a different, I'm not going to just say, guys, I'm a woman, you should hire me. It's, I bring a different energy, a different performance, a different feel to this atmosphere other than everybody else. Mm-hmm. And so that's nice. And it's very different, and people are willing to hire something that's unique and pay for something that isn't something that they're used to seeing, which is great. But I would never, ever use my gender as a crutch. And I think that this is a huge thing that a lot of women in magic do. And a lot of people, I would even argue many African-American magicians also use their race as a crutch. And I think that's across the board in all professions, that it's easy in comedy and acting, it's very easy to use your gender or what's different about you as a crutch to say, I'm different already. I can use my difference to mask my lack of skill, hard work, talent, et cetera. So that's what I try not to do. I don't come out on stage, and I'm pretty conservative when I perform. I don't have anything really revealing. I don't wear anything revealing, and I make sure of that. That's very important to me, because I want them to focus on what I'm saying and my performance and the magic versus what I look like. That's really important to me. And like, it took me a while to even just not wear a full suit on stage. I had to be, oh, okay, I can be a little bit more freeing, but not so, you know, okay, it's great. And that's just my take on my personality and my performance style. But I think it's really important to not use your skin, or, you know, the color of your skin, or the amount of skin you're showing as a crutch.
Interesting.
To mask not working hard, not being different in your performance, or just not being good. And that happens a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to call anybody out, but I think it happens just so much, and it's so easy. It's the same with, I think, comedians, and this is male comedians as well, very easily can swear or talk about sex or things like that. And it's easy to talk about those things because everybody makes everybody uncomfortable, and therefore they naturally laugh. So it's an easy crutch to talk about. Mm-hmm. Women a lot talk about sex, or if they have a kid, they talk about their kid, and in a weird, like, I hate my kid type of way. I've seen so many stand-ups who are women who talk about how much they dislike their children. So it's weird that that happens, and it's an easy out as opposed to being witty and creative and different in your material versus just how you look.
Yeah, you have people like Amy Schumer who will, you know, I'm a big Amy Schumer fan, mm-hmm. and she'll do that, but she'll do it in a way where it's twisted, you know, where there's I had a thought and I lost it, but I feel like the way she's doing it is to turn it up on its head, yeah. and, you know, to take those stereotypes, and, you know, she can say something, and then because she's a woman, people will go, oh, I can't believe she said that, but if a guy said that, it would be no big deal.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's such a weird balance and a weird battle. I would assume that you have to go through every once in a while, if that makes sense. My thought is escaping me right now.
Yeah, I think it's funny you mentioned that if I experience a frustration with my gender in this community outside of Los Angeles, and I would argue that I experience it every day in Los Angeles.
Interesting.
Which is weird. As you said, you know, the president of the Castle is Erica, and there are many women who perform at the Castle who are of a high caliber. You've got Suzanne's performing, you know, Misty Lee. You've got so many amazing, Malin, you know, all these amazing magicians that come, and they are women and they're amazing. And so at least with the Castle, with the Magic Castle, you get this different experience. You get to see a lot of high caliber women who are performing magic, and it's great. But then there are also plenty of people that still don't understand. And being in the magic community and being a minority is incredibly difficult. And my very first, I walked into a society of young magicians in Connecticut when I was 7 years old. And I remember it was February of 1998. I walked into the room. I was introduced to the leader. He introduced me to a group of teenage boys who told me that I should just leave. And I was 7.
What?
And thank goodness that however my brain works, I just didn't care. And that's sort of how I've been since then. I'd never really cared what anybody had to say or think if they couldn't back up their opinion about me. And that's fine. Like, I, you know, and that's great. I'm really happy that I just never cared about what anybody had to say about it. And still, you know, I get all the time, well, oh, it's so weird that you're a magician because you're a woman. Have you ever thought about being an assistant? You would be a great assistant. Well, no, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting, the dynamic that women in magic will go through. And there are a lot of negative stories I can share. A lot of negativity happens. But I think the positive is more interesting to focus on. And if I focused on the negative about being a minority in a community, I wouldn't want to be in this community.
Yeah.
You know, if that's honestly, like, there are things that have happened to me or my friends that would absolutely deter anybody from becoming a magician if they're a woman. And so instead of focusing on all of that, I just tend to focus on what's exciting about it and how I can be different and what I bring to the art form versus what people tell me I shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, and I really like – I'm. Thank you for talking about that, because
sure.
I appreciate it. It's always been fascinating to me, because you can tell the good people from the bad people who just even think that right away. Oh, she's a woman, she must not be good.
Right.
And I'm glad you talked about the crutch, because I noticed it a lot in the last season of Fool Us.
Yeah.
Like, half the people were amazing. You know, some of the best in the world, obviously. And I think a couple of the others that they had come through were really using their crutch, whether it was skin color or woman or I'm a nerd or, you know, whatever.
Absolutely.
And didn't have the skill set and weren't ready to go. And it's like, all right, maybe you shouldn't be complaining about that.
Right.
If, you know, focus on, like you said, the positive. And I think that's something a lot of people forget.
And I think you can very easily make it a part of you. You know, it's obviously a part of me that I'm a woman, and sure. It's obviously a part of me that I'm a minority, and it's things that I've seen, you know, it's a part of me, all of my experience being a minority in the magic community. But I would never get out on stage and I don't say, hey guys, I'm a woman. Yeah. And how cool is that?
How many people here noticed I was a woman? Raise my hands.
Did everyone see, for the most part, you know, we talk about this all the time, the other women in magic who kind of share the same view as me. We talk about all the time that the people that we perform for, who are mainly 99% of the time not magicians, right? Corporate clients, cruise ships, colleges, they're not magicians. They don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care. Maybe the person that's hiring us is like, wow, something unique, cool. But the people we perform for don't care. And the reason is that they don't have enough education of magic to understand that we're a minority. If they then start to think about it, I've had a few people be like, do you know David Blaine? Do you know David? Oh, wait, I can only name male magicians. Yeah, how weird is that? Yeah. What's that like? And then maybe we'll have, you know, they'll ask, you know, is that true? Can I just not think of any female magicians? And we're like, mm-hmm. No, they're just, you don't know. There isn't a household woman name in magic, which is cool. You know, it's fine. Ideally, that will change in the near future. And some of us, like Misty Lee, is getting just fantastic press, well-deserved press. And Suzanne going on Fool Us and fooling Penn and Teller is just so amazing. Mm-hmm. And so it's so great to see these fantastic women getting such fantastic press and ideally getting out into the world and, you know, inspiring younger girls to do magic. I went on a few tangents there.
No, that's totally, all of that makes sense and Yay. Is totally legit.
Great.
And just in terms of influences, where do you pull influences outside of magic? We're more so interested in not so much the magic in this podcast, even though it's labeled as the Magician's Podcast.
Sure.
But more so like, you know, music or acting or theater. Or
yeah. Great question. I think most of my inspiration comes from just things I see of normal people. And that's a weird way to word that question. I like to sit at coffee shops and watch people function in their daily lives. And I like to see how they hold their cell phones or pick up a cup or walk. I'm really, you know, things that people do on a daily basis, I find are really interesting. And my show and my performance, they're very much based off of my experiences and my stories and things that I have, you know, gone through or fun little facts about my life or me, which is really cool. I like to share that with the audience. And so I like to then I get inspired by things that I see or experience and then can put into a routine. I get inspired a lot by music. I often will hear a really cool piece of music on Pandora and then, or Spotify.
That's a plug. Pandora, please give us money.
Hi, Pandora.
Sorry, continue.
I can Spotify, iTunes, everybody.
Anybody.
Sponsors. Yeah. I'm here for you, Nick.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And so, yeah, so basically I like to hear random music and then I'll say, oh, wow, that could be a really cool routine. And then I'll put something to it. So I just like to be, I'm not somebody who can sit down and say, today I'm going to create a routine. Mm-hmm. I can't do that. That's not how my brain functions. I like to see things, hear things, experience things, and then put them into a cool piece of magic.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Thanks.
What are some career goals, things that you want to do?
Sure. So right now I am working on my full show, my 1-hour show, where I want it to be really good. And then I hope to get onto cruise ships and in colleges. I've already done some colleges, but I haven't performed on cruise ships yet. And so that's the immediate goal, are those two markets. The ultimate goal, which I'm sure is the goal of many magicians, is to be performing in one location where everybody can come to me versus me having to go to them. And that would be really convenient to get as, you know, life progresses and time to settle down, have a family. It would be great to just be able to perform in one location nearby and you know, bring people to me, which mm-hmm. is great. So that's the ultimate goal. The other ultimate goal is just to, I love making people happy. That's really important to me. And I try to do that all of the time and make people laugh, or if they're sad, make them happy. Just, you know, I like making other people feel good. And so the ultimate goal is just to do that as much as possible. And no matter what kind of day you're having, or if you just went through an 8-hour meeting that wasn't super fun, and then you see me, ideally, we'll make your day super mm-hmm. great. So that's the ultimate goal.
Would going to Vegas and opening something appeal to you?
No.
No.
God, no. I lived there for a year, which was a very bittersweet experience, I think. I loved what I learned, but how I learned it was really difficult, if that makes sense. So the process to learning vital information about having this career was a really difficult process. Mm-hmm. And Vegas itself, it's very oversaturated with performers of all art forms.
Sure.
And so for magicians especially, so many magicians go there with the hope and dream of opening a show somewhere on the Strip. And some of them do it incredibly successfully. If you look at Mike Hammer has a fantastic show. I believe it's on Fremont Street. And he's been there for years. Mm-hmm. I think he's still open.
I think so.
And yeah. He's done great. And Jeff Civilico, who's a juggler, he opened his, you know, he has a show and he's four-walling and doing fantastic job. It was a great show. And so it's not impossible. It's just really, really hard.
Yeah.
And that's not the goal that I want. I would love to have a show in like a Hilton or a Marriott or, you know, some sort of hotel where it's a family friendly hotel in the LA Santa Monica type area, where it's just something fun for, they've just had a really long vacation. They're leaving tomorrow morning. We want to stay in the hotel. What do we do? Hey, we'll go to this really cool show on the second floor of the hotel. Like, I would love that type of situation. Mm-hmm. Something that, you know, in a great location, very touristy, very family friendly. That's where I would like to be. Mm-hmm. Vegas is, I don't fit Vegas, that's for sure. And Vegas does not fit me. And it was really good to learn that before I set my mind on doing something there, mm-hmm. Which I'm very happy and very thankful for having to learn that.
Yeah. A lot of people have asked me if I would ever go to Vegas. And yeah. After living in Orlando, it's like, I can't imagine living in Vegas, you know, dealing with the touristiness and also the constant drunk. Like, you got drunkenness in Disney World, but it's amplified, you know, 1,000% in Vegas.
Oh.
Especially when their tagline is "what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas" is just, hey, do whatever the hell you want. Exactly. We don't care.
Exactly.
Are you a terrible person? No Yay. Problem.
Yep, agreed.
Yeah, I have no interest of going there, so I totally understand that.
Yeah, and I did a lot of the corporate work that was there. So as I mentioned, you know, people would go into an 8-hour meeting and then leave that meeting and come to the after party or after meeting.
Hospitality suite.
Yeah, whatever it happened to be. Maybe a trade show client was putting on a party for all of their potential clients, people they met at the trade show, things like that. And you would get done with all these meetings, and then you'd have to go there and think that you were having to work more, because it was, again, more networking and talking about things. But instead, there was me. And so it was more fun and enjoyable. And for 20 minutes, people could just kind of get out of that mundane daily situation, which was great. And then I loved doing that. And then people would be there. I'd be there until midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning doing magic. People were very happy. And when I say happy, I mean drunk at that time. And so it's fun for me. I enjoy performing for tipsy to drunk people. Mm-hmm. I'm used to it. I performed for 2 years at a bar in Boston.
Okay.
So I enjoy that atmosphere. I like being sarcastic in that atmosphere. And I can also do more simple magic, which is nice. Mm-hmm. That sounds kind of weird, but it's true, is that I can start out the night with my more original routines and end the night with my fun spins on things like Chicago Opener or Ambitious Card, things mm-hmm. like that. So, and it still is so mind-blowing, because I've capped, you know, you get them at the beginning and then you can kind of join the journey of their drunkenness.
Yeah.
As the night goes on.
You've done the castle bar.
Yeah.
And I imagine as the night goes on there, it gets more and more drunkenness.
Oh boy. The Magic Castle is a really special place of drunk people. Mm-hmm. Because people fight so hard to get into the Magic Castle that they're so happy to be there that they're like, let's just celebrate this as much as we can.
That's exactly how Disney World is, too.
Yeah.
People are just on cloud nine. We're here.
Yep. Yep.
I don't
Disney
care.
Disney World is fantastic.
Give me,
yeah.
Give me alcohol.
And when you've got like Epcot and you can drink around the world. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It's, I mean, it's the same idea where you're if you're performing for those type of people, it can be, for me, there would be nights where it's just so frustrating because you're like, just watch, stop saying things, shut up and watch me perform.
Yeah.
With the
bar at the castle, it's, and this is okay, similar to you because you were street performing, right? At Disney.
Yeah.
The bar at the castle is very much a street performance because you have
so much chaos going on.
So much chaos. There's another show behind you where there's a line and they're waiting and they don't necessarily care that you're doing a show. They're just going to talk. And so you have to fight over them, and then you have to gain an audience. You do. It's not a showroom where there's a line and people line up and there's a set time. Yeah. It's, we just go. And so you have to gain an audience. And luckily, I worked, like I said, 2 years at a real bar. And not that the castle isn't a real bar, but a Marriott hotel is a very different situation than the Magic Castle.
No exclusivity.
Right. And I was bartending at the same time. Sure. So I was very Docu-Sin style, where I would bartend, and then after everybody had drinks, I would perform. Mm-hmm. And so the Magic Castle is a breeze compared to that. Oh. But for sure, come 11 o'clock, 10:30, 11 o'clock, I've had people fall asleep and fall off their bar stool.
Wow.
Which is actually really funny. Mm-hmm. I've had people just have no clue what's going on. And they're like, wait a minute, what happened? What happened to the cherry? And you're like, okay, let's back up. And it makes it fun for me because I am sarcastic and generally blunt. And so it's fun to play off of that in a still kind way where the person that is being silly doesn't feel like I'm berating them or making fun of them. We're just kind of going on. We have to step back from the normal audience and then go back on the journey with them and then and then continue. I like to say things that the audience is thinking. If that makes sense. So if somebody's being really loud, the audience is thinking, they're so annoying. And so I might make a joke about them being very loud. So the audience is still on my side, but you can have some fun with the really drunk people too.
Yeah. To me, that space is the most, seems like the most challenging space within the whole castle because it's just chaos around you at all times. Yep. And even though you have a microphone, it's still like you have to be paying attention quite a bit to see what's happening in that spot.
Yeah, so absolutely.
And that I think ultimately is going to make you a better performer because you can go anywhere else and it's a breeze.
Yeah, I agree. And the space there is, it used to not have such a great sound system. They just sort of updated everything. And I'm really thankful for that because the sound system before didn't have a microphone. And I just kind of gave up on the microphone because it sounded so strange and I just was yelling. And so by the fourth night, I'm doing 6 to 8 shows each night in a 4-hour time span. And it's a lot. It's a lot of yelling. Your voice certainly is going slowly as the week goes on. So it's great that they now have the microphone and they're doing a lot more to make that space easier. Because not everybody is Doc Eason or Eric Mead, or I'm not putting myself in that category of the Doc Eason or Eric Meads, but I have had actual bar experience versus a lot of people come in and try to do close-up magic on the mat, which doesn't always work. Mm-hmm. And they might have more quiet personalities where that space really requires a loud, big personality doing close-up to parlor style magic.
Yeah.
So it's a tough space for sure, but it's fun. It makes it really enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. We asked everybody this, what was your best gig experience and what was your worst gig experience?
Oh boy. Okay. My worst gig experience was, it probably turned out to be one of the funniest stories. And so, my friend and I had performed for this face paint and body art convention in St. Louis we did it for 2 years. And, we were the juggler at the magic show because they were all face painters, body artists, mm-hmm. and balloon twisters, and we were the magicians. And there weren't everybody who did magic there. They all were very hobby, you know, hobbyist. They enjoyed doing maybe one magic trick at a kid's birthday party, but they weren't magicians for sure. And all self-defined themselves as not magicians. And so we, us coming in and doing some more complicated original magic was really great. So we were the jugglers at the magic convention. And the first year we performed there, one of the big guys in the face painting world had passed away very, very, not so far before this convention. So it's still very sad situation. And my friend and I are getting ready for the show, and they just finished their dinner. And then the woman says, now we want to play a tribute to this gentleman who passed away. And they played about a 10-minute slideshow.
Wow.
I'm not exaggerating. And we're like, okay, all right, here we go. And as soon as the slideshow ended, everybody is crying. And the woman goes, we're really like, oh my God, we're really going to miss him. He's so wonderful to this community. We're just going to miss him so much. And now please welcome Kayla and John. And we were like, what? That's crazy. So we went on and we performed. We had to gain back the audience after they were crying. And I have this one routine where I quote unquote pre-show somebody. When I say pre-show, I mean, I just make sure that the person has a specific object in their pocket. It's not a trick object. I just need them to have a wallet. That's it. So I always ask somebody before the show, hey, do you have a wallet and do you mind helping me on stage? Cool, done. And this gentleman I went up to, he seemed really surprised that I was talking to him. And he was fantastic. I got great pictures. I used them in my promo material for a solid year. Really amazing spectator. Everything you want. And the next morning, somebody came up to me and said, hey, I thought that was really awesome what you did for Tim, using him in your show. You know, I thought that was really great. And I didn't understand why. And then they had to explain to me that the man I used as a spectator was the man who passed away's twin brother.
Oh, wow.
And I had no clue. So that was...
You didn't watch the slideshow.
I didn't, because I was in shock that what was happening.
Hey, wait a second. What's going on here?
They didn't look that much alike, though. I would like to give myself some credit.
And now for my next trick, he's back.
Oh no. That would be hilarious.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so that happened. And then the second year, which is a significantly better story, is that I do a routine where I call up three spectators and they play parts. They play these fun characters I give them. So very stereotypical, like the jock, the nerd, and the closeted gay kid from high school. That's the type of character they play. And the guy who was playing the nerd, I didn't realize that he was from basically neck down body painted because he was wearing a tracksuit. And when I called him up on stage, I gave him the character. He was the nerd and he played it really fun. He was like, he didn't want to touch me and really cute things he did. He was great. And then at one point I was explaining something to the audience for the procedure of the effect and the audience started going crazy and I had no idea why. So I turned around to see that he had just taken all of his clothes off and was body painted and just out for the world to see.
Mm.
And so that is my experience at the face paint and body art convention in St. Louis.
Sounds like a great experience.
It ended up, it's a fun story, I think.
Yeah.
I certainly had some fun with it, but I think that in the moment, both those times were moments that I was like, I hate my job. Because in the moment you're like, why would you take your clothes off on stage?
Mm-hmm.
Or why would you introduce the entertainment immediately after everybody's crying? Like it was really difficult, but now they're a fun story.
Yeah.
My best gig. Oh my. This isn't a gig, but it's one of my favorite moments of magic. And I never perform kids magic, but there's something about this moment that really was amazing is that I was on the subway in New York City and this little girl and what I presumed to be her babysitter or nanny, not her mother or anything, but definitely like a caregiver, walked onto the subway. And this little girl is maybe 3 and a half, maybe 4, like we'll say 3 to 4, very young. And she was afraid to sit on the subway next to strangers. But the woman didn't want her standing, so she made her sit down next to me. And the girl was very frightened because she was scared. She didn't want to be near the strangers. It's a scary, you know, New York City subway is a terrifying place sometimes, especially for a four-year-old. So she sat down next to me and was terrified. And so I asked the caregiver, I was like, hey, do you mind, can I, you know, cool if I talk to her? And so I showed her some, just a simple magic trick. In the 30 seconds we were on the subway system, and the girl was laughing. She was having so much fun. She was like, I love the subway. She was like, so just completely different human being after I showed her this trick. And it, that it was really amazing to see what magic can do for anybody. It can do that for absolutely anybody. If you are just having a bad day or whatever, as I've said, you know, just, it can really turn your day around, turn that moment around. And that was a really awesome experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And as, we're wrapping up here, any,
shoot, we're done already.
Any, yeah,
I talk a lot.
We can keep going. It's, oh, we can talk more about, naked people. And
did you ask me how, what it's like to be a woman in magic?
No, I didn't. Do you, okay, what's it like being a woman in magic?
Fantastic.
Where do you put the pockets? No. Which is a legitimate question.
It is, and a question I still haven't given you an answer, given a good answer to. So we'll come back to it.
I think we touched on this, but what are your thoughts of the current state of magic? There's so much going on right now, so many different styles, yeah, and yet people still have an impression of magic in their head when you say magician, whether that be male or female. What are your, any thoughts on that? I guess we touched on that a little bit at the beginning, but...
Yeah, obviously magic is always evolving, right? And new styles and new performers come into play. And who would have thought that you could ever do card manipulation by, you know, literally opening your fingers and closing them? But Hector Mancha did it in one FISM, or second place at FISM. He won some FISM award, right? You know, would have never thought that that were possible, but people come up with new cool things every day, which is great. And I'm happy for the constant evolution of magic. I think the magic on television, I'm not a huge fan of. I love the Carbonaro effect. I'm super happy for Michael. He deserves every bit of his success. He's so hardworking, and it's a fantastic show. But then there was a ripoff of it,
really?
For a Candid Camera show. And then, you know, there are some other shows on television that I won't mention, but I'm sure you can guess that I just think gave magic such a bad name and impression. I love Fool Us, obviously. Mm-hmm. It is the epitome of what magic on television, I think, should be. To bring magic that people have tried and tested for years, putting it on television and showing them off and showing off their experience, I think is really important. Because that's what magic is you have to work so hard for so long to create good material. It's not something that you can create in a week or 30 minutes. It's something that you really have to, you know, work and try for audiences and everything. So I think Fool Us is the epitome of what magic should be, as is the Carbonaro effect. It brings a really interesting spin to, you know, unique magic and that Candid Camera style television show. I think people are always going to have a weird impression of magic because, they're, you know, magic is always seen. You hear comedians talk about it or, you know, any comedy show or, you know, sketch shows like Key and Peele and all that. And they totally make fun of magic and I'm okay with it. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with it.
I think it should be made fun of because it's ridiculous. Yeah. We're claiming, you know, something, well, not all of us, but we're claiming to have magical powers.
Right.
And even if we're saying we don't have magical powers.
Right. It's still this weird, it's weird.
But you can still respect it.
Yes.
You can still, like, watching somebody in a heavy hair metal band playing guitar, you know,
right,
you know, flailing all about on the stage, that's ridiculous,
right.
But still there's skill involved.
Absolutely. And I can respect it and understand that it took a lot of work. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I don't mind going into a situation where people say, where's your hat and cape? Can you make my wife disappear?
Oh,
I mean, it's monotonous and annoying, but at the same time, it's fun to then, I love that break of the stereotype. That's like, no, I don't. And I can't make your wife disappear, but I know a good marriage counselor. Like, you know, I can break the stereotype because I am not the stereotype, and that's important. And I love doing that. So I'm okay with that. It, you know, it is what it is. And I think it's going to take a really long time and too much hard work to break that. So it's okay. I would say that the thing that I wish would change about magic is, I'm looking at a book right now that says drama, and that's what I'm going with, is that there's just so much magic drama and magic thievery and and all of that, that I would love for that to stop. Mm-hmm. I would love for magicians to focus on creating their own material and putting their own unique spin on things, rather than taking, again, the crutch, the easy way out, and taking somebody else's stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. It's important to have ethics and morals in this community. We are such a small community of such really weird, often introverted people, you know, that it's already tough enough for all of us. Why do we have to make it more difficult? Mm-hmm. So I would love for that to cease. That's my only qualm, really, with the state of magic now, is just, let's just accept everybody for, if they're a hobbyist, a professional, you know, just accept it. Stop stealing stuff. Stop creating drama. And just...
Stop. Don't be a dick.
Yeah, exactly. I think that is the perfect
phrase. There's a lot of dickishness going on, and it just blows my mind. Anytime I'll go up to somebody at the castle, go, hey, great job.
Thanks.
You know, it's just no, take the compliment and don't be a jerk about it.
Right.
You know, I don't care who you are.
Right. Absolutely. I agree. I think, again, we are such a small community of such weird people that I don't understand how we can't just be okay with each other. And of course, you're not going to like people. There are plenty of people in the magic community that I would prefer not to hang out with and spend my time with. Yeah. And that's fine. That's the world. But I don't disrespect them. The people that I don't respect are these dicks that I'm talking about, right? And I think that that's a fair statement. Oh, my God. I can't believe I just said that. But I did.
These wieners we're talking about.
Yeah.
No, it's... Yeah, it's... This is taking a weird turn. But no, yeah, there is... It's such a weird... Because we're all, for the most part, solo performers, but we're all in this together.
Yeah.
You know, we are in this batch of weirdos who... do make-em-ups and, you know, lie to audiences for a living, some claiming to have real magic powers and some not.
Those people are weird.
That I will never understand.
Nope.
And, you know, it is what it is, but I think ultimately you should try to just respect everybody the best you can.
Absolutely.
You
know, I think you said it better. Well, I'm so thankful for my close friends in magic and how we all are just so supportive of each other.
You need a little... Yeah, I think with anything, you need a little group like that.
Yeah.
Somebody who can say, that's good, that's bad.
Yep.
Work on this.
And nobody cares. Like, we don't care on who your name is or how famous you are in the magic community. You're just another person to me, and that's important. And so some of my friends are very well known in the magic community, and I don't care. I'm never going to, you know, none of that matters. We're all... just magicians and such a great community, and we all support each other. And no matter how big your name is, how good you are, how bad you are, we're here to support each other. And that's what I think is really important, is that the magic community is a community for people that don't fit in anywhere else.
Sure.
And I've always, you know, as a 7-year-old kid starting magic, the magic community is somewhere that you fit in, and you probably don't fit in at Boy Scouts or on the basketball team, but you fit in doing magic. And some people haven't really realized how important that is to our community. So I just think that the drama and all of that is the thing that really starts to ruin magic. And I don't like how it gets put out into the world. And then people are like, oh my God, you'll never, you know, the magic community is so crazy. Mm-hmm. They're all so dramatic and geeky. And I hate that, like, I'll call them out. I hate the stuff that Jimmy, oh my goodness. I always confuse the Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmels. Which one is the one?
Jimmy Fallon is, oh, wow, great, that's amazing. And then Jimmy Kimmel is from The Man Show.
That didn't narrow it down for me at all.
Jimmy Who's Kimmel's on ABC.
Definitely didn't narrow it down.
Jimmy,
okay.
Jimmy Fallon's Tonight Show.
Cool. So Jimmy Fallon's the one that plays all the fun games, and Jimmy Kimmel does the fake news on the street.
Yeah.
Jimmy Kimmel has had a bunch of people on his show, and he just makes fun of magicians in the worst way. And I hate that.
Yeah.
Like, I hate that idea of being like, magicians are so geeky, nerdy, who wants to ever talk to them? And I think we do that to ourselves by, like, making such drama and calling each other out for being that way. And instead, everybody should just be accepted into our fun community because we're cool people sometimes. So that's important.
90% of the time.
Yeah.
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 That's cool. No, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Thanks.
And hopefully, you know, put some influence out there for sure.
Yeah.
But
I hope everyone listens and does that.
Listen. Listen to what I say.
Oh, yeah. First start by listening and then do that.
Yeah. I feel like there's some, like, rule I should be knowing. Listen, act, react. I don't know. I'm making up something from theater class. None of this makes sense.
I liked it. We do have that drama book we could flip through.
That's what it is.
But it might be another 3 hours of this podcast before we find the answer.
Bedford Introduction to Drama is sitting on your table, and yep, it's at least 2,000 pages long.
Easily.
I majored in drama. Never saw that once.
That's fine. I didn't major in drama and have also never seen that, but I live with someone who has majored in drama. And he whipped that book out the other day and was like, let me tell you about this. So
he starts putting on kabuki masks.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's cool.
Do I live with Jeff McBride?
Yeah.
I don't. Everyone listening, I don't live with Jeff McBride.
Oh, that wasn't him? I thought he just left. Okay. Anyway,
you might have.
Thank you so much for doing
this.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
Yeah.